Hello, I'm Bruce Maples, publisher of Forward Kentucky, and today I'm pleased to share with you my interview with Aaron Petrie, who is running for Andy Barr's seat in Congress in the 6th District. Before we go to that, though, let me remind you that if you like the work we're doing on this channel, please subscribe. If you like this video, please give it a like. And please go to forwardky.com and sign up as a member. We have a free membership as well as some paid memberships. You'll get a lot of value out of them, and we cover a lot of progressive news in Kentucky. With that, let's get to our interview with Aaron Petrie. So we're here today with Aaron Petrie, who has announced that she is running for the 6th Congressional District seat that's being vacated by Andy Barr since he's running for Senate. Aaron, welcome to Moving Kentucky Forward.
Thank you so much, Bruce. It is a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'm excited to have you here as well. You and I got connected through a couple of things. You were a speaker at our Summit 25 and did a great job talking about how to get engaged in environmental issues. But I know you have a lot bigger background than that. So real quickly, for the sake of our listeners and viewers, tell us about your background.
Yeah, absolutely, Bruce. So, personally, my background is, I grew up on a farm in Lawrenceburg. I went to school in public schools here in Lexington, and I always wanted to be a Foreign Service officer. And that's what ended up taking me to Washington, D.C. to get my undergrad at the George Washington University in international relations. And then I accidentally double majored in anthropology because I'm fascinated by how people interact with their environment and their cultures and kind of how our history is shaped.
Sure.
And so then after that, I went back to the University of Kentucky to the Patterson School of Diplomacy because I'd always been impressed with the program. I interned there in high school, and I knew it as a program that really equips professionals to, kind of take that next step into that public service. But unfortunately, I graduated at the height of the Great Recession. So jobs in the government as a Foreign Service officer were few and far between. So after a short stint of a year teaching English in Korea, I moved back to Washington, D.C. and launched my career briefly in renewable energy. I had my first kind of start in the American Wind Energy Association. And then I was recruited to be the special assistant to the ambassador of Libya to the United States to help the Libyan government reestablish their relationships with the U.S. after the fall of Gaddafi and after the beginning of democracy in Libya.
Wow.
Yeah, my third day was Benghazi. So I do know how to deal with high stress, high stakes situations. But after the embassy, I moved my career into building things. I'd always been fascinated with kind of building infrastructure. And so I worked with a company that was working with the Export-Import Bank to send U.S. goods and services overseas. We were building medical cities and renewable energy projects overseas. And then after that, I started in biomass, building ports and manufacturing facilities all throughout the Southeast United States, creating jobs in dozens of states. And then I ended up helping scale an electric vehicle company trying to transition corporate transportation to electric to both help with costs as well as, combat GHGs, greenhouse gas emissions. And then most recently, I was working on trying to make sustainability a core part of Amazon Web Services data center expansion. So really trying to do the best for the communities that these data centers are going into. So trying to make sure that the world's largest hyperscaler was doing it in a way that was responsible. And then, people like to talk also about the fact that my biggest hobby is Kentucky bourbon, and I am an educator, a writer, and someone who works with the industry and have done that for over a decade.
Wow. With that resume, I think Congress might be a step down. I mean, that's I have to say, that's of all the people I've interviewed, that may be the most impressive resume of anybody we've interviewed. Wow.
Well, Bruce, my mom would tell you the same. I'm humble myself, but there's always more to do and there's always more work to be done. And Bruce, I'll tell you, because you're probably going to ask me this question anyways, but I will preempt it with, folks ask me, Aaron, why are you doing this? And I said, well, listen, I had a choice to make last November. I knew this seat was going to be vacated because Mitch McConnell, I'd heard that he wasn't going to run. And knowing Andy Barr's, self-serving trajectory in politics, I knew he was going to go for the Senate. But I realized, I said, I have a choice to make. I can either sit around and keep complaining. I was up for promotion in under a year at Amazon, slated to make a lot more money, a lot more responsibility, or I could really do something. And I'd been trying to get back to Kentucky for a long time, but the jobs just weren't here. And I thought, why not use all of the things that I have done, all of the skills that I have built, all of the people that I have met around the world, and use it to try to better the place that I love more than anything in this world, which is the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So that's exactly what I did.
So, okay, good. I mean, I appreciate that.
Yes.
But it's not like nobody else had the same idea.
Sure.
We joke about the cast of thousands running for Andy Barr's seat, and there was another announcement, I think, yesterday or the day before. So
Ruth,
you already had Sherrilyn
yeah.
Stevenson,
Yes.
who has an organization, has done this before in that part of the state. Now, granted, she lost her last race, but that was more because of the Republicans in Frankfurt being scared of Democratic women. And then you've got, other people that are running. Zach Dembo just got endorsed and so on and so forth. So, and you saw all this. I mean, it's not like you didn't see these people. So why then for you to jump in, and what makes you think that you're going to be able to bring something that's going to be enough to get past them?
So September 3rd is the date that I actually announced, right? But I'd been thinking about this since November, right? So this was a process that has taken me a long time, and I wanted to make sure that I made the decision for all the right reasons, and that it was something that I truly did want to do. And I kept having these conversations over and over again, and there were so many points where I could have bailed, but in my gut, I knew that that was not the right choice. And I will just say on the Zach on Zach's endorsements, he's been endorsed by two organizations that are veterans organizations, right? He's the only veteran running out of the Democrats, so I think it makes sense. So
There you go.
so that's just I wouldn't expect them to endorse me as a non-veteran, right? So but the thing is that I do truly think that I can do this better than anyone else in the field. And you already said that my background is the most impressive, and I, a little humble brag, I agree. I know how to get things done, especially when things get tough. I also know how to talk to Republicans. My mom was a three-time Trump voter, and she is now a registered Democrat and one of the most staunch critics against him. And all of that is because I talk to her like a person. And I know that if my mother is struggling with her party, that there are so many other folks out there. And by the way, she did not just do it because she's my mom. More than anything, she's been calling me a bleeding heart liberal my whole life, especially when I had a Carrie Edwards shirt on in high school. And so, but I fight like hell for everything that I've ever gotten. I am one of the, I also, the other thing on these issues, the biggest issues that are facing this country right now are ones that I have worked in and I have deeply educated in. I have worked in foreign policy. I've worked in international trade. I have worked in renewable energy and data centers and AI and technology. I mean, yeah, I've also been a teacher. I have done a lot of these things, and I know how to set politics aside and just get things done. So that's the other challenge with me personally with, our current political system. Yes, there might be some other folks out there who have dabbled in the political space here in Kentucky, but that doesn't mean that anything is promised to them, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the best person for this job at this time.
That's good. Not only the passion with which you said all of that, but you had three or four really good campaign slogans in the middle of all that. So good stuff. Okay, so let's get to brass tacks for just a minute.
Do it.
So you announced in September, but you've been thinking about it since last year. Where are you on the couple of things that I always ask candidates? Where are you on staffing? Do you have a campaign manager yet? Do you have any other staff? And secondly, how are you on fundraising? Don't want a number. I can go get those later. Just how do you feel like that's going? So let's talk about staff first. Do you have staff?
Yeah, so this is a totally new world for me, right? But I have scaled startups before. And so, I've conduct I was I've played a lot of jobs at companies that I've had before. So I know how to hire, but I also am kind of running my campaign, as cringe as this sounds, like a startup, right? I want to make sure that I'm being very careful with the money I spend, very intentional with it, making sure that we make best use of our greatest assets, which are two things, time and money. So my time, my people's time, and treasure of all of the voters out there. And so I'm currently interviewing for a campaign manager. I do have some folks who are helping me with fundraising. I have some folks who help me with, who helped create my launch video. And then I also have a team of about seven interns, who are both from my graduate school as well as from universities around the area who are really eager and ready to dig in, learn, and help build a grassroots organization from scratch. I don't plan on building some crazy big organization because I think that that's a waste of time and money, because I want to spend my time getting out talking to voters, and I want to be as lean and effective as I can be. As far as fundraising goes, I'm gonna be straight up with you. I hate fundraising. I think it's terrible. And I especially, Bruce, the thing that, I mean, personally, I will go out here and put this line in the sand. I think that we need to have publicly funded elections. I also think that we need, people talk about term limits, and I think in theory it's good, but I think that in practice it's challenging. Where I think that it would be better is if we shortened these election cycles. We have a day that you're allowed to actually start, and if we shorten them by months, I mean, Sherilyn, she announced a year before the primary, others almost a year before the primary, and I have about 8.5 months, right? And the fact that we are trying to do all of this and trying to take all of this money, and this is not a hit on any of them. This is just facts, right? The fact that we all have to be out there asking for money for a year or more is insane to me for a house race. And so, especially when so many of my friends are struggling with prices going up at the grocery stores and for basic housing materials, and now all my friends in the federal government are furloughed, not knowing when they're going to get a paycheck because Johnson said it's going to be the longest ever. Great. I feel wrong doing that. I feel wrong asking them for money, and I hate the fact that the world looks at the money that I can bring in by, as the success of my campaign. My fundraisers yell at me all the time, actually, because they're saying, "Aaron, make the hard ask. Aaron, make the hard ask of 1,000 or 3,500. Ask them to max you." And I said, "They just bought a house. They just got divorced. They just had a kid. They are furloughed from their job. Well, how could? Why can I? Why should I feel that they should be giving me money over feeding their families?" But I'm still out there, and if folks resonate with what I'm saying right now, aaronpetrie.com is where you could go and donate to help me do this. But yeah, I mean, that's my long answer. My short answer is I'm working on it, Bruce. I'm getting comfortable with making those asks, and I'm looking forward to a good quarter.
Yeah, when I ran for office, that was the hardest thing for me to do. And I'm not a shy person by any means.
Me neither.
But yeah, it's tough. And I learned, if you believe in what you're doing, then you eventually learn that that belief has to carry you to ask to make the hard ask. I like your fundraisers there. So let's just imagine for a minute that you win the primary, and so you're the Democratic nominee for the 6th district, and you'll be going up against one of these Republicans, the cast of thousands that's running. What are you going to say to the voters in that district? You're blessed by the fact that it's a little bit bluer than the rest of the state, so you do have that going for you. But you just mentioned that you can talk to Republicans. So what will you say to them about why they should cross the aisle, as it were, and vote for you?
Well, one of the things I find very interesting about that cast of thousands on the Republican side is that, and I mean, I said this in my article that the Herald Leader did when I launched, is that the Republicans are just trying to out-MAGA each other and trying to clamor to the top of saying, "No, I'm the most loyal to Trump. I love Trump the most." And it's clear that the Republicans have one master, and that master differs from those on the Democratic side. The master for the Republican candidates is one person, and that's Donald Trump. The master on the Democrat side is one entity, and that is the voters. And so I want to appeal to voters. But listen, I'm no ideologue, right? I mean, listen, I wish we could all have everything. But I'm someone who's very practical, and that comes from the fact that I have negotiated billion-dollar contracts. I've built big things. I've had to make tough decisions when it comes to hiring and purchasing and firing. And at the end of the day, people really care about one thing, and that is making sure that they and their families are taken care of. So when I go into these conversations with people, I ask them, I say, all right, what is keeping you up at night? What is your biggest challenge? And I want to like put some ground rules on the table, right? I don't want to hear Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, and I certainly don't want to hear the name of any politician. I just want to hear what's happening to you and then telling you how I would fix that and work to help fix that. And then put it into a broader conversation and say, and then bring that politics back in and say, well, listen, I'm not asking you to vote for me because I'm part of a party in particular. I'm asking you to vote for me because I want you to trust that me and the party that I'm representing wants to make sure that you have a better day for your family tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And I have real ways to talk to all of those different types of lived experiences. And so, whatever those issues might be, whether it's, business and jobs and education, I have ways to talk to them about it that are both practical, not pie in the sky, but pragmatic and clear talking points that I know that we can actually make progress on those issues. And so that's the way that I talk to people. I like to talk to people as people, not just as a number or as someone who might subscribe to a different ideology than I do. Bruce, I'll tell you one thing that's funny. I was engaged at one point to a guy who was the former editor of the Dartmouth Review, which, if you know that pet magazine, it is one of the most conservative publications in college politics. And we're still very good friends. He's also a donor to my campaign, still a Republican, but knows and believes in me. And I got him to come out with me to Allentown, Pennsylvania, to knock doors for Biden during COVID. And I mean, literally still on his phone, he still has his hat, his picture is him in a Hillary hat. Because I talk to people like people, even the people who are the most dyed in the wool. I can talk to them about what is going on. And do you know how many other people who I've worked with in the past who differ from me politically, who have donated to my campaign because they say, Aaron, this isn't about politics. I believe in you as a person who will do the right thing for people.
Wow, that's great. That's a really good point to make. So I know you've already obviously been out talking to people. What are you hearing when you're on the porch or wherever, the coffee shop, whatever? What are you hearing people say to you in your district that is really top of mind for them?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, let's be real. The first thing that people are really worried about is cuts to all of these core programs. And my whole life, I've believed that the government needs to work for the people. There is no other purpose for it. I mean, clearly, we think that apparently it's just there to enrich defense contractors and political consultants at this point. But folks are worried about the cuts to SNAP. Folks are worried about the cuts to Medicaid and Medicare. And more than anything, they just don't understand how their prices keep going up, their taxes keep going up, and what they're getting back is less and less and less and less. So the number one thing we have to do is make sure that the core programs, SNAP, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, Head Start, all of those key programs that let people live a life with basic human dignity are protected and are never on the chopping block. The second thing is going to be education. I mean, education is a huge problem, especially, listen, I'm a Fayette County Public Schools graduate, and one of the first things I did after I announced is I went to one of the planning meetings at FCPS's board because they're having this huge budget overrun. And they're worried. They're like, how did this happen? Our teachers continue to get paid low. Our teachers continue to have to spend so much of their own money for their basic classroom supplies. Kids are not getting the quality education that I got not too long ago. I'm having my 20th high school reunion this year. And Yet we now have a double digit million dollar. Like, I mean, the fact that there's almost $17 million in a budget shortfall in Fayette County is appalling to me. Woodford County is having similar challenges. And all of this is happening while this administration is wanting to dismantle the Department of Education and putting a pro-wrestling executive at its helm. So education is what will not only help us today, but it's the way to lay the foundation in the future. And then, I mean, the third thing, I mean, there's all kinds of things that are out there, but the third thing that I'd like to touch on, because this impacts every single one of us, because none of us can help escape from our own human bodies, is healthcare. Healthcare costs are going up. The ACA, the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare is under attack. And I saw something today where 35% of the people on Obamacare or on ACA are Republicans. That's 10% more than Democrats, and I think it was 15% more than independents. So, because it's mostly people in rural areas and red states that need to subscribe to these open exchanges. However, the people they've put in office are the ones trying to dismantle it. And we saw that just, I mean, jarring photo that Raphael Warnock posted a few weeks ago, which I shared on my socials, which showed their premiums in these districts are going to double, triple, quadruple. Bruce, I have Crohn's disease. All right. I have a chronic condition that requires management. It almost killed me a few years ago, but I fought through it. And Lord have mercy, the bills that I saw after that, even with really good private health care, were insanely expensive. I talked to someone yesterday who they have private insurance and Medicaid because their child, even with private insurance and Medicaid, out-of-pocket costs for insulin for their type 1 diabetic 9-year-old are $900 a month. That's insane to me. It's crazy to me. And so healthcare is the thing that not only it's not just basic human dignity, it's survival. So people are worried about their healthcare. People are, I mean, I'm going to go back to that whole Maslow's hierarchy, right? Folks are worried about the bottom of that hierarchy right now more than anything. And that's going to stop us from being able to actually advance and build and evolve. So people are worried about those programs, about paying more and getting less, about their kids being educated, about the teachers in their neighborhoods being paid well, and by their school systems being actually funded well. And then also for us to just be able to not have to choose between getting preventative screenings and making a rent payment.
Those are all key issues, I think. I think you're exactly right that those are the things people want to talk about. So let's close with two questions that I ask every person I ever interview. The first one is there anything that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
So, yeah, I mean, one thing is, you know, one of the reasons that we were brought together, right, was my penchant for climate action. And so that is also part of my campaign. And I know being in Kentucky, people are like, oh, no, you can't say that. But I mean, listen, climate change is real. We're seeing that all over the place, right? We're seeing that in the spikes in our energy bills because guess what? It costs more to cool our houses because, you know, we're deep in October and yesterday was like a 75 degree day, which is a beautiful day, but still warmer than I remember. But the other thing is, too, is that Eastern Kentucky, other parts of Kentucky are seeing worse and worse natural disasters. And most of that is due to the fact that climate change is getting worse and we are not doing anything about it. And this administration and the party that is in charge of every aspect of government right now denies it. But when insurance companies don't want to insure property down the road from Mar-a-Lago, you know that it's real. And so energy security, energy independence, and energy affordability are a key part of my campaign. And we need to close the gap that is continuously being created by us moving away from coal. And we need to have better energy that is cleaner, that is more affordable, that puts us more in an independent space so we don't have to rely on other places for fuel. So energy independence is a big thing. And a lot of folks say, like, oh, but that means you have to put solar on fertile farmland. That's not what I'm saying. There are other options. There is nuclear, there is wind, there's battery storage, but it also just has to do with long-term planning and not having this allergic reaction to the concept of renewable energy. And those are the kind of things that big companies are doing. So we should be doing it here too, because if it is profitable for other companies like Amazon and Google and Microsoft to do, it is the right thing for people to do too.
Good. Cool. I'll give you one point that I make when I talk to people about climate change. I tell them, well, according to various research, Kentucky's going to get less rain, but more of it at once. And they go, oh. And I say, instead of, nice little showers, you're going to get drought for 3 weeks and then 3 inches of rain in 1 day. Anyway, I
Which is
may tell.
bad for our farmers, which is bad for our communities, which is bad for our water systems.
Yeah,
It hurts our
I
infrastructure.
may take that out because it's superfluous, but
I
it's
like
just,
it though.
yeah. All right, my last question.
Yes,
So
sir.
let's imagine that I live in your district,
Sir.
and you come knocking on my door, and you're standing on my front porch, and I've actually opened the door, unlike a lot of people, and you're telling me who you are, and I look at you and I say, okay, why should I vote for you? What do you say?
I say, I've spent my career delivering results for my stakeholders, for my customers, and I have worked tirelessly to make sure that the folks who I am working for get the best deal that they want. And in this situation, you are my customer, and I am dedicated to working for you tirelessly to make sure that you get a better life and your kids get a better life, and that essentially you get the life that I grew up with in Kentucky. Because I had a great life and you deserve that life, and so do your kids. And trust me, you will be able to reach out to me. My staff will answer the phone because constituent services are one of the most important things that representatives in Congress can do. And you better believe that I will be there to show up to every town hall, to answer every email, and to make sure that I am voting like my constituents want to, not like my party leadership wants to.
Good. Excellent. Aaron Petrie, running for Congress in the 6th District. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on Moving Kentucky Forward, and good luck with your campaign.
Thank you, Bruce. It's been a pleasure. Thanks again.